Spy's reserved Viennese, I could almost hear them wonder who would have dared disrupt opening night at the Theater an der Wien with this audacious display. Only the overzealousness of a parent could have excused it, but I knew my cautious parents would have never dared the gesture. Was it one of my fellow actors' families who'd made this misstep? As the ushers proceeded closer to the stage, I saw that their arms brimmed not with ordinary flowers, but with exquisite hothouse roses, perhaps a dozen bouquets. How much would this abundance of rare red blooms cost? I wondered who could afford the decadence at a time like this. The ushers mounted the stairs, and I understood that they'd been instructed to deliver these bouquets to their intended recipient in full view of the audience. Uncertain how to manage this breach of decorum, I glanced at the other actors, who looked equally perplexed. The stage manager gesticulated to the ushers to halt this display, but they must have been well paid because they ignored him and lined up in front of me. One by one, they handed me the bouquets until my arms could no longer hold them all, at which time the ushers laid them at my feet. Up and down my spine, I felt the disapproving glances of my castmates. My stage career could rise or fall upon the whims of these venerable actors. They could dislodge me from this pinnacle with a few well-placed words and replace me with any one of the number of young actresses clamoring for this role. I felt compelled to refuse the bouquets until a thought struck me. The giver could be anyone. He could be a prominent member of one of the feuding government parties, either a conservative Christian Social Party member, or a socialist Social Democrat, or worse, my benefactor could sympathize with the National Socialist Party and long for the unification of Austria with Germany and its newly named Chancellor, Adolf Hitler. The pendulum of power seemed to sway with each passing day, and no one could afford to take chances, least of all me. The audience had stopped clapping. In the uncomfortable silence, they settled back into their seats. All except one man. There, in the center of the third row, the most prized seat in the theater, stood a barrel-chested and square-jawed gentleman. Alone, among all the patrons of the Theater an der Wien, he remained standing, staring at me. Chapter 2. May 17, 1933, Vienna, Austria. The curtain fell. My fellow actors shot me quizzical looks, and I gave them a shrug and a shake of my head that I hoped conveyed my confusion and disapproval of the gesture. As quickly as seemed appropriate amid the congratulations, I returned to my dressing room, shutting the door. Anger and worry surged through me at how these flowers distracted from my triumph, this role that would help me firmly put ecstasy behind me. I needed to find out who'd done this to me, and whether it was meant as a compliment, however misguided, or something else. Pulling out the envelope hidden amid the flowers of the largest bouquet, I reached for my nail scissors and slit it open. I pulled out a heavy cream card rimmed in gold. Holding it close to the lamp on my dressing table, I read, "To an unforgettable Sissi, yours, Mr. Friedrich Mandl." Who was this Friedrich Mandl? The name sounded familiar, but I couldn't place it. My dressing room door shuddered with an authoritative knock. "Miss Kiesler?" It was Mrs. Else Lubig, veteran dresser to the star of every Theater an der Wien production for the past 20 years. Even during the Great War and the despondent years following the Austrian loss, the gray-haired matron had assisted actors onto the stage for the performances that buoyed the Viennese spirits, like the character of Empress Elizabeth, who reminded the people of Austria's historical prowess